Are you ready to embrace your own version of Escape to the Chateau? I hope so, because in today's episode, we're going on a virtual tour of the magical world of Chateau in the Charente region of France. These stunning castles are straight out of a fairy tale, and you're going to be feeling like you've stepped into the pages of a Ladybird book, that you've written your own historic tale, the one where you become the hero or heroine. And we'll be exploring the fascinating history behind each chateau and sharing some interesting facts and legends. After all, we all love a good legend to spark the imagination and transport ourselves back in time. But before we dive into this episode, I want to remind you to go to lifeinruralfrance.com/podcast, where you will discover everything you ever wanted to know about France. You'll better sign up for special offers and hear about deals on hotels, tours, and all sorts of wonderful things. And of course, you'll be the first to know when we drop a new episode. Bonjour and welcome to the Life in Rural France podcast. I'm Kylie Lang, a British blogger living in the beautiful Charente region of rural France with my long-suffering hubby Richard and border collie Lottie. Now, unlike most people, moving to France hasn't always been my dream, but that didn't stop me jumping at the chance when hubby, who has never lived anywhere other than Leeds, England, suggested we go live in France. And 6+ years later, we're still here, living in a property we've renovated and a life that if you told me 10 years ago I'd be leading, I would not have believed you. But it's not all about me on this podcast. I'm going to be sharing the hidden gems I've discovered in France, some fascinating stories about French history, and plenty of culture thrown in for good measure. So I invite you to join me on this journey of living in a tiny French commune, getting to grips with learning French, singing to ABBA in the fields, walking my dog, and discovering the joys of the rural life. One thing I can promise you is it won't be boring. And who knows what we might discover together on this rollercoaster ride of life in rural France. Hello, 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 and welcome back. Oh, I'm so excited about today's episode because I absolutely love chateaus and I can't get enough of them. And since I started this podcast, I've had quite a few emails from people asking me for more information about the department I live in, which is the Charente. It's Department 16. And you know what? It's a department not many people have heard of. Our neighbouring department of the Dordogne is much better known, but the two are really similar. They're both full of these little old villages that look almost as they did a few centuries ago. You know, if you exchange the cars for horses and carts, I don't think you'd be that far off. They are packed with character, and many of them still have churches dating back to the 12th century. Imagine that. So today, I want to take you into my French world and walk you through just 5 of the fabulous chateaux near where I live. And we're starting off with Vertoy. Now, it has taken me a long time to pronounce it that way. My French teacher, Sharon, is very particular with my pronunciation. And trust me, I am not perfect, not by a long shot, but she would kill me if I did not pronounce this correctly, especially on a podcast. So, number one, the Chateau of Vertoy. Now, if you have ever dreamed of visiting a village that is, like I said in the intro, stepping into the pages of a fairy tale book, then you are going to love Vertoy because it's exactly like that. And I'm lucky enough to live just 20 minutes away. And Vertoy is one of those villages you just never get tired of. It has the Charente River running through it and the chateau. You can literally see it from every single angle. And you can always tell a first-time visitor to the village because they've got this look of amazement on their faces as if they can't quite believe their eyes. It is that stunning. They've got their cameras out. They don't know where to look. It's just, oh, you can spot it a mile off. Now, as you approach the village, the chateau just kind of bursts into full view and it's in an elevated position. And the only thing I can say to describe it or, you know, do it justice is it reminds me of the type of castle you could imagine Rapunzel letting down her long golden hair. Did you ever read those Lady Bird books when you were a kid? Because I did. And this chateau has all the makings of being the castle where Rapunzel was imprisoned. It's got 5 conical towers and it literally takes your breath away. It used to hold weddings, so you used to be able to get married in the chateau. I mean, I can't think of anywhere more romantic to get married. Unfortunately, though, in the summer of 2021, the chateau did close its doors to the public. It was purchased by an Austrian millionaire and it became a private residence. Every now and again, he flies in with some guests and holds parties, and it has the whole village gossiping because some of the guests make their way to the local bar, and that local bar is the source of much gossip. Anyway, Vertoy is a wonderful place to visit, and it really is one of the most beautiful villages in the Charente. And sitting in the market square with a carafe of wine, staring at the chateau in front of you, oh, it is the best way to pass the time. But back to the chateau. As you'd expect, it is full of history. It dates back to 1080 and it has been extensively rebuilt over the years, although I'm happy to say some of the 12th century walls do still remain. However, the thing that really amazes me is that for 1,000 years, it has remained within the same family, the La Rochefoucauld family. Now, that's not to say it wasn't captured and occupied over the years, because it was. In the Hundred Years' War, oh my God, the castle was occupied multiple times by English forces. It was razed to the ground in 1442, but it was then rebuilt using the original stone. Then in later centuries, the chateau became a strategic stronghold for the Huguenot fighters during the religious wars of the 16th and 17th centuries. Unfortunately, in 1650, royal troops did partially demolish the structure, but the chateau is kind of like the phoenix that rises from the ashes, and it was reconstructed once again. During the French Revolution of 1793, it did suffer extensive damage in a fire, and nobody knows if it was started on purpose or not. But it was finally restored to its former glory during the Bourbon Restoration of 1815. And a little bit of trivia for you. The word Vertoy was actually used in the medieval ages or the Middle Ages to designate a fortified place. And that's exactly what this castle was for, to fortify and protect. For me, though, the most fascinating piece of history occurred during the Second World War. So although it was partially occupied by the Germans, more importantly, it was a hiding place for members of the French resistance. So they were known as the Marquis, the resistance, and they were very active in the Charente. And a large part of our region was occupied during the war. And certainly in this village, it saw neighbour turn on neighbour. And even now, it is so obvious that there are still grudges between the villagers in Vertoy. And on Remembrance Sunday, oh my goodness, there is a definitive divide between those who supported the resistance and those who collaborated. Trust me when I say emotions still run very high. And a friend of mine who owns one of the very old properties in the village, a lovely French lady called Marie, showed me the wooden floor in her lounge where you can still see several butt marks of German guns. She was only a very little girl at the time, but she told me she remembers the German soldiers coming to the house looking for resistance members. Apparently, the Nazis had had a tip-off from an informant in the village that a resistant member was hiding in that house. They searched the house from top to bottom, so Marie tells me, and in the salon, the lounge, they pulled up the rugs and they banged their guns on the floorboards because they were looking for loose floorboards in case anyone was hidden beneath them. Now, they didn't find anything, and Marie remembers her mum shaking from head to foot after the soldiers left. God, it must have been terrifying. Anyway, back to the chateau. Oh my goodness, if those walls could talk, they'd have quite the story to tell, because they've played host to a fair few illustrious guests, including the future monarch Henry IV of France and the formidable Catherine de' Medici and her daughter Margaret. Also, Louis XIII, Anne of Austria, and the Queen Mother Marie de Medici. And they've even had UK royalty as well as guests. Apparently, the Queen Mum stayed there in 1980 and had a bedroom named after her. Now, even though the chateau isn't open to the public anymore, a visit to Vertoy is a must, because you can see the chateau everywhere. You might not be able to go in it, but actually, just seeing the outside of it is almost enough. And if you go to the Seneschalerie Bar up the hill from the village square, you get spectacular views. You almost feel as though you could reach out your hand and touch it. That's the Seine-Chalery Bar. Number two is the Chateau de Rochefoucauld. This, again, is only 20 minutes away from me, but in the opposite direction. And it also happens to be where I go shopping every week. It's such a lovely drive from my house. And I get to see the chateau every week as I drive to Leclerc. Sometimes, if I'm in the mood and if it's a really nice day, I drive into the village, park up, and just walk up to the chateau, take it all in. It's just, I still can't believe it's all on my doorstep. Anyway, Chateau de La Rochefoucauld is also named after the La Rochefoucauld family, the same family who owned the last chateau we talked about in Vertoy. It also sits on a hill, but this one obviously overlooks the town of La Rochefoucauld. And not unlike Vertoy, La Rochefoucauld is almost pretty much dominated by views of the chateau. And as I said earlier, driving through the village, you can literally, it just looms ahead and it draws you in, calling you closer. Now, we visited the chateau several times, and on one occasion, with some Australian friends of ours, we were lucky enough to meet the Duchess herself. She was lovely. She still lives there. And she did spend 10 minutes or so chatting with us about her home and her ancestors. Her English was faultless, and she told us she'd been to a Swiss finishing school. So there you go. And as you look up at the chateau from the car park below, it really is imposing, and you can see why it's called the Pearl of Angoulême. Now, the La Rochefoucauld family, they're a fascinating one because they've got a really rich history that dates back to the early 9th, 10th century. So there was a Lord of La Roche, and his name was Foucault, first appeared in the records around 1019, I think it was. And Foucault built himself a wooden camp on top of a rocky spur. And the French word for rock is roche, which explains the castle and the family name. Then in the 11th century, his son built a square keep at the same site. What was obvious, though, was the Foucaults were actually a close relative of the Viscount of Limoges. So they descended from the court of King Charlemagne. And with only four other families in the whole of France able to claim such a noble ancestry, that's pretty impressive. So it kind of explains why the La Rochefoucauld family own so many of the big chateaus in the Charente. And in 1453, to mark the end of the Hundred Years' War and to, you know, assert his political authority as the lord of the region, Jean de La Rochefoucauld added three more towers to the castle. So it raised the height of the main tower to really oversee this domain from a much greater vantage point. Then in 1519, François de La Rochefoucauld and his wife Anne began to transform the south wing of the castle. And that's when you start to see the Renaissance style creep in. And according to legend, the circular stone staircase, which is quite some staircase, I can tell you, was actually constructed based on drawings from Leonardo da Vinci. And the West Wing was the last significant alteration to the castle structure, and it was completed in 1760. So this family rose to great prominence within the French nobility over the centuries. So they started as lords, then they became barons, counts, and ultimately dukes and peers of France. But that's not really what draws me in here. For me, I did a bit of digging. I found out a lot about this family, and the most fascinating tale is actually from a more modern member of the family, Robert de La Rochefoucauld. Now, he was a wartime hero, and he risked his life several times because he became a spy of the SOE, which was Churchill's Special Operations Executive. And he was captured not once, but twice by the Nazis. He was sentenced to death both times and somehow managed to escape both times as well. The first one, he was literally in the truck on his way to his death. And somehow he managed to jump from the truck. He hijacked a nearby limousine and made his getaway. The second time, he hit a guard over the head with a table leg, stole his uniform, and then shot two other guards to escape. He dressed as a nun and was able to get to a safe house, completely undetected, and then he was spirited away by the resistance. But to really get an insight into the lives of the French aristocracy, you need to do a tour of this particular chateau because it's fascinating. From the boudoir of Marguerite de Valois to the prison tower, a Gothic chapel, there is something to interest everyone. But my favourite part was the 200 or so costumes that they've got that you can dress up in. And my hubby just couldn't help himself, could he? Granted, he was egged on by our Aussie friends, but I've got some great pictures of him dressed up in all his finery. It was very good fun. But the tour takes you on around 20 or so rooms, and most of them are still furnished. There's some really beautiful tapestries and paintings and furnitures, as well as lots of ornate decorations, you know, typical of the various eras. The castle's grand salon is really impressive. It's got very high ceilings, large windows, exquisite decorations. But I think for me, I loved visiting the kitchen the most because it just gave you into this fascinating glimpse into life below stairs in medieval times. Now, I'm a big Downton Abbey fan, and the kitchen in that series has always fascinated me because it's where everything happened, and the kitchen is the heart of the home. But this kitchen in the Chateau de la Rochefoucauld, oh, it takes it to a whole other level. They've restored it to its original state. So it's this enormous fireplace, copper pots and pans that you could literally sit in, and a range of all the cooking utensils that they would have used. And you can only begin to imagine how hard life would have been as a scullery maid or kitchen hand all those years ago. And the library was stunning as well, and apparently contains over 20,000 volumes of rare manuscripts and books from the Middle Ages. It is one of the largest private libraries in France. So worth having a look if you're into books, which I am. And the castle's treasure room, another highlight of the tour as well. It contained over 240 boxes of family archives, including letters, documents, all sorts of artifacts from the castle's long history. So it really is a fascinating glimpse into the La Rochefoucauld family, who just held such a privileged position in, you know, French history throughout so many centuries. The third chateau on our list is Chateau de Bayeux. Now, this one is literally 5 minutes up the road from where I live in Saint-Fron. And the first time I went to look at it, big mistake, I went on my bike. Not the smartest of moves because it's up a massive hill. And I'll admit to getting off my bike halfway up the hill to push it the rest of the way because I was shattered. And now I'm probably a little bit biased, but this part of the Charonne, oh my goodness, it is a little slice of French countryside heaven. It's quiet, it's peaceful, it's pretty. Often you'll see the deer just standing in the fields. And in July and August, those same fields are a blaze of yellow. Sunflowers. The sunflowers just take over the Charente. It's such a shame they only last for about 6 weeks before they start to wilt. But you will want to drive carefully around this region, because especially at night, because several times I have been faced with wild boar. And trust me, these animals are not something your car wants to argue with, because you will lose. Chateau de Bayeux. It will be no surprise to hear that at one time, this chateau, surprise, surprise, also belonged to the Rochefoucauld family. It was built in the 12th century, and its main role was that of a fortress. And you can still see some of those remains, such as the dry moat and the walls of the keep. Now, like pretty much all castles of that era, it did suffer during the Hundred Years' War, and much of it was destroyed. But in 1454, Guillaume de la Rochefoucauld came to the rescue and renovated it. And he turned it into a place to live as well as a castle that was built to protect. Now, unfortunately, during the Wars of Religion, the castle was attacked once again, and you can still see the dents of the muskets that were used in the attack above the doors. The dilapidated old castle was in a real state of disrepair for years, and it was sold in 1788 by its previous owner, Marie-Louise Françoise de la Rochefoucauld Bayeux, to Jean-Michel Delage, the governor of Angoumois. Now, unfortunately, Delage passed away in 1793 before he could start any restoration work. And after his death, his widow sold the property to various owners in 1803. But no upkeep or repairs were done. So it really fell into complete ruin pretty much throughout the 19th and the early 20th century. But in 1976, it was sold again, and this time it was restored to what you can actually see today. Now, it is not as big or as impressive as the Verteuil or the Rochefoucauld Chateau, but Bayeux, it has its own charm. And as with most castles of this type, it had at least one well that supplied the drinking water for those living within its walls. And the well in the courtyard of the castle is apparently about 46 meters deep. Now, it doesn't supply the water anymore, but it is still in working order. And you can see the remains of the Romanesque keep and the prison with its tower where the prisons were kept. The main living room, yeah, it's a bit austere. I mean, it's got beautiful flagstone floor, massive fireplace, which would most definitely have been lit morning to night to try and, you know, keep the inhabitants warm. It was how they kept warm, was these big fires. But it was well worth a visit, and it definitely gave me a glimpse into what the castle on which our property was built might have looked like. Now, if you want to know more about that, you need to listen to my very first episode, episode one, where you can hear all about the castle at Chaix-le-Coq, where I live. And we still have one of the original wells and the bread oven, but not much more than that, unfortunately. Number four on the list is the Cognac Chateau. Now, what better combination could there be than the history of a French chateau and the evolution of a cognac cellar? That's exactly what you get when you visit the Chateau de Cognac. So it's only 90 minutes from the wine region of Bordeaux, just about an hour away for me, but it is undoubtedly is the city that has helped to put Chiron on the map a little bit more. And the chateau is actually situated right in the town of Cognac. So there's lots of things to see and do, including tours of like the Hennessy distillery once you've toured the chateau. Cognac's actually got a really checkered, interesting history because the actual town exchanged hands quite a few times. And in some cases, wars were caused over who had ownership of the town. But what we do know is that the chateau was built around 1200 on the banks of the Charente River. So it was around this time that the lordship of Cognac had been sold to King John of England. So in 1202, John entrusted the castle, King John entrusted the castle and its dependencies to Renaud the Second de Pont and Robert de Tournon. They were serving as the seneschals of Poitou at the time. So in 1216, when King John died, there was a big war over Cognac. And despite facing threats, including excommunication by the Pope, it was Hugh the Tenth of Lusignan who actually seized the castle. And in the 13th century, the Lusignan family made several extensions to it. And between 1366 and 1370, the castle, believe it or not, was the primary residence of Edward, Prince of Aquitaine and Wales, who was the son of King Edward III of England. So this place is just bursting to the seams with history. Now, despite King Philip IV of France linking the lordship of Cognac to the French crown, the castle changed hands multiple times during, all the sieges and treaties that went on throughout the Hundred Years' War. And you know what? I always find it so strange to think of people owning a town rather than a country. But that's the way it was all those centuries ago. And then, after being held captive in England for 33 years, John, who was Count of Angoulême, not King John because he's died by this time, Count of Angoulême, he returned to the castle and he found it abandoned and in a state of ruin. And he began reconstruction on the castle in 1450. And his wife and him, or actually it was Charles by this point, they transformed Cognac into a hub of intellectual and artistic activity. And their son, King Francis I of France, built the long facade that faces the banks of the castle in 1517. Now again, lack of maintenance meant the castle fell into disrepair during the late 17th and 18th centuries. And then finally, in 1795, the castle was purchased by traders, Messrs. Ottard and Dupuy, who turned it into cellars. And their name is still above the door today. So Baron Ottard de la Grange was a Scottish nobleman. And thanks to him, the chateau was able to really escape all those ravages of the French Revolution. It didn't get destroyed. But it wasn't just the history of the place that won him over. Apparently, it was the aging conditions in the castle with its thick walls that were perfect for eau de vie. And eau de vie is what's used to make cognac. The cellars, which are in the lower vaults of the castle, are at the same level as the Charente River. So the humidity combined with the thickness of the walls means that the temperature is around 15 degrees throughout the year. And apparently, perfect aging conditions for eau de vie. So when you tour around the cellars, which you can do, you'll see the oak barrels that are used for this aging process, and they're all crafted using wood from the nearby Limousin forests. You'll also get to see some of the rooms that were used by King Francois I, including the Salle d'Etat, which is used for entertaining guests. Oh, it's a really good tour. And it's just a unique opportunity to see some French royal history combined with, you know, this region that is famous for cognac. Oh, and you get to taste some cognac too, so what's not to love? The final chateau on our list is Chateau Villebois-Lavalette. This chateau is more a ruin than anything else, but don't strike it off the list. It stands really high above the village, and you can see it from miles around, which is like a common theme really with all of these chateaux, because they were built to protect. They were fortresses. But the village is right on the edge of the Périgord and the Charente, and it's listed as a petite cité de caractère. And it's also home to the famous Cornouel. So these are little pastries. It's made with shortbread pastry, and they're triangular in shape, and they originally had aniseed seeds sprinkled all over them. And you can still buy them now. We get them in our local Leclerc. They're yummy. To get to the castle, it's quite a steep climb. Honestly, my legs were killing me, but it was so worth it because right from the top, you get the chance to see the village. And oh my goodness, this village, Villebois-Lavalette, is stunning. I had lunch there in the restaurant just down in the village square. Absolutely beautiful. But when you reach the top, the view is breathtaking. You just get this full panorama of rolling hills, beautiful Charente countryside. And as you walk through, you go through the original entrance, and it's massive. And it kind of gives you a feel for the size of what this would have been like. Parts of it are still there, and the courtyard is huge. And if you close your eyes and you let your imagination wander, you can almost see the bustling courtyard as it would have been in medieval times. Because remember, these castles were like little villages within a village. They didn't just house the family who owned the castle. They housed knights, servants, tradespeople, animals. There would have been wells, bread ovens, stables, blacksmiths, and everything that goes along with it. In fact, when you go in on the right-hand side, you can still see some of the old latrines that were used by the inhabitants of the castle. There's three toilets sat together. No privacy, but a pretty good view because there's portholes. Now, I actually visited this castle with a friend of mine, Alan, who I've spoken about before, lives up the road, just next door but one to me. Now, Alan is ex-military. And he was able to tell me about how well the castle was fortified and protected. Each turret that we went into had these tiny little arrow slits for the archers on both sides, which apparently would then allow them to assure they could, you know, protect the castle from all angles. And each tower was not connected by a staircase, but by a platform, so that the soldiers could easily run from tower to tower. Because if there'd been stairs, if the enemy had managed to break through the castle's defences, they would have had easy access to the people in the towers. And there were also cannons filled with gunpowder and stone balls used to attack the oncoming enemy. We saw one of the cannons that would have been used. It's still there. But the biggest discovery at this particular site is an underground area, which nobody knows anything about. It was discovered in the 2000s when the current owner had a team of archaeologists working on the site. There's no record of when it was built, or who built it, or what it was. But they've had to reinforce the ceiling with concrete to stop it from collapsing. But the guess is that it was part of an original 11th century fort. So there's a total of four castles that have been built up on this hill. The first one was in 959, which was like a moat and bailey or Mott and Bailey castle. And you can still see parts of the moat as you walk around the outside of the castle. Then in the latter part of the 12th century, it started to turn more into what we see today. And it passed from family to family. And the castle was then constructed of stone instead of wood. And a total of 7 towers were built that were surrounded with ramparts. And there was also a church within the castle, and it's almost completely sunk underground now. It was all roped off because we could have fallen in otherwise, but you could look down and see the church. But archaeologists have started to unearth more of it, which you will see when you visit. Then in the Middle Ages, there was more added. This time they added a drawbridge, they had more fortifications to protect it. And in 1597, after fighting for the castle in the religious wars, Jean-Louis Nogaret de la Valette bought it. And in 1622, the Villebois region was created and it took the name La Valette, giving us Villebois La Valette. Now, in 1615, there's some pretty important stuff to happen because the castle had a royal visit. Louis XIII stayed for one night at the castle with his bride, Anne of Austria, as they were making their way back to Paris after getting married in Bordeaux. Apparently, he also then later went on to stay at the Chateau de la Rochefoucauld and also Chateau de Verteuil, so two that we spoke about earlier. But when he arrived on the evening of December the 28th, there were huge celebrations with the Duke of Epernon waiting for Louis with 4,000 men and 500 horses to protect him. And it's rumoured that Louis was so enamoured with his visit to the castle that he planted an acacia tree in the courtyard. Now, the tree was apparently burnt in the fire and a fir tree was planted to replace it. But miraculously, the castle didn't suffer during the French Revolution, but it did serve a few purposes. So for a while it was a school, then a prison, and then a police station. So a little bit of difference. But the fire I was just referring to happened in 1822. And unfortunately it happened to the residential part of the castle and it was pretty much destroyed. You can't actually walk on that part now of the ruins because it's all been cordoned off because it's dangerous. But you can still see the ruins of it. You can see the outlay of it. And then the castle was bought in 1914 by Dr. Maurice de Fleury. He apparently was the grandfather of an actor, Bernard Lavalette, whose family owned the castle until 1998. So that's the connection there. And it was the two brothers, Philippe and Bernard, who took on most of the renovation work on the West Wing to make it habitable in the 80s. Finally, in 2000, the castle was purchased by the current owner, Norbert Fredin. And the work still continues. So although it is more ruin than anything else, it was absolutely fascinating spending time there walking around. And we spent a good 2 hours going through everything. And you got a real sense of just what an imposing fortress it would have been in its heyday. And you know, with a lot of these things, you can just feel the history oozing out of every wall. And so now we have come to the end of our escape to the chateau. What I've shown you here is just 5 of over 100 chateaux in the Charente, each with their own story to tell. Next week, we're going to be talking about food as we take a trip to a French boulangerie. We're going to discover the history of the baguette and find out where the croissant really came from and unravel some of the mysteries behind the French love affair with bread, including why it's unlucky to place a loaf of bread upside down and if Napoleon really was the man behind the invention of the baguette. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Life in Rural France podcast. Remember to visit lifeinruralfrance.com/podcast to get notified every time I release a new episode. And if you enjoy the podcast, I'd love you to leave me a review and subscribe. And don't forget to send in your questions for Listener of the Week, where I answer your questions about France in the show. So until the next time, I hope I filled your life with a sprinkle of French sunshine and a lot of French fun.